Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. I'm very excited by the work of Otessa Moshfegh. Her new book of stories is called Homesick for Another World. It's published by the Penguin Press. Now, I identify with this phrase, homesick for another world, very deeply. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you?
Well, what it means to me is that I don't feel at home here. but the phrase also has a little twist of self-parody in it. It's like, oh, the drama of feeling existentially misplaced. And that's kind of the whole collection. Like people taking their own misery a little bit too seriously.
Yeah, some of the stories go mockingly far.
Mm-hmm.
And then comes one that gets into the weird, Mr. Wu.
Yeah.
He is obsessed with a woman who runs a parlor, a game parlor.
Computer cafe, basically.
Yes.
And it happens in China, right?
And he has fallen in love with her, but his discretion prevents him from telling her.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if one of the ideas of the book is that when someone is in love with someone, they are going to punish them.
Oh, God. Really?
Well,
that comes across. Shoot.
Well, you know, Mr. Wu goes off. He doesn't want to be rejected.
Right.
By the manager of the internet cafe.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes off to see prostitutes,
mm-hmm.
prostitutes in another city,
mm-hmm.
where he won't be located. And he looks for first the prostitute he saw last time, she's not there. Then a prostitute who's intimidating to him appears, and he says, no, send me someone stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, your mouth is open at the directness of the violations going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems as if one of the things that the book does is to make clear that people can't very readily pursue their own happiness
mm-hmm.
without becoming what?
Perverse?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, happiness is a totally selfish feeling. Of course it's going to, we're going to pursue it at the expense of what the people around us want us to do. Right? I mean, if I wanted to be truly happy, I would be such a weirdo. I mean, I wouldn't be like driving my Volkswagen around LA shopping at Trader Joe's.
Because there is this strange feeling in here that if there is not another world, we have to find it inside this one.
Right.
And the characters are given essentially tasks. A young girl in the final story, A Better Place, is given a divine vision of the person she has to kill in order to escape this world and enter the better place that she remembers from before birth.
Right, totally literally.
Totally literally. So that the possibility of this story being like any of us feeling alienated and wanting to go somewhere better, this is not that.
Mm-hmm.
This is a child's view of a truth
mm-hmm.
that by killing an evil man, She will open a window mm-hmm. through which she'll be able to crawl immediately into her better place.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the conundrum isn't really about that, but about leaving her brother behind when she does it.
Because he's a twin. And he was born barely before her.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he knows.
He knows about it, but he's not so ready to pursue this killing. It really is, she one day wakes up and has a name in her head. That's the man I need to kill in order to get back to the other place. And she doesn't even know that he's a real person until she's sort of mumbling his name over breakfast. And her mother says, "How do you know about that guy?" And it turns out that they have some history. I won't give it away. But it's also a story about the power of fiction, too. I mean, you just wake up with an idea and then it becomes real. I don't mean fiction writing. I just mean the power of delusion. Yeah.
And it's full of moments that we've experienced in strange places. I remember I had a friend in college who was a pianist, mm-hmm. and I would go to the music rooms to listen to her practice. Mm-hmm. It was so quiet down there. It was in the basement, and you locked the doors, and there was a strip of glass, but you mm-hmm. really couldn't see who was inside mm-hmm. Any room. And in this story in your book, two young musicians are locked inside.
Right.
And the orchestra is rehearsing downstairs, so no one can hear their screams.
Right.
They try to make a rope mm-hmm. out of the opera chamber costumes mm-hmm. that are hanging in the room.
Well, you know what? That story is 100% true.
I was sure.
That actually happened to me when I was 15. In the story, it's a girl with her first ever boyfriend who's this real character. But in real life, it was a girlfriend of mine, a female friend of mine. And we really did get locked in a room and decided the only way out was to tie these opera costumes together, tie the end of it to a radiator and throw it out the window. And we were having the conversation of who was going to climb down the 5 stories against the brick. And she was a very, very petite person. So I was saying that she should probably do it. And just as we were about to crawl out, one of us, this car comes screeching around the alley. Nobody had been coming by at all. This man slams on the brakes right at the, like, right under the window, gets out angry, slams the car door, points up to us, "You pull that back in right now." Who the hell was that guy?
And why didn't he come rescue? You know, like, I mean, what are you girls doing?
I don't know. It was so surreal. I mean, obviously, he saved my life. Was he real? Maybe I just imagined him. I don't know. It was very strange. Yeah. So anyway, that's one of the stories. That's one of the true stories in the book.
I'm talking to Otessa Moshfegh about Homesick for Another World, her new book of short stories. There seem to be a number of autobiographical stories, or stories at least whose detail penetrate the story and arrive at me in some unmediated way.
Mm-hmm.
One of those is An Honest Woman.
Oh, God. That was one of the harder stories to write.
Why is that?
Well, I have never had an experience where I have been completely manipulated so deeply and then realized that I was so misled. Except for this one time I met this person. And I based the character in An Honest Woman on that man. In the story, his name is Jeb. And it was a very powerful experience for me personally. And I didn't know how exactly to write the relationship between these two neighbors, Jeb and this young woman who moves in next door. I think I probably wrote 6 or 7 drafts of the story. And in each previous draft, the woman was always really passive. I didn't know how to finish the story. And then I realized that she really just needed to just tell this guy that she saw his game and he can go straight to hell and ha, ha, ha. So.
Yes, you're angry, essentially, yeah. She tells him, at all the women who've made you feel old and ugly.
Yeah.
And now you're being self-pitying and you're trying to splash your misery onto me and even blame me for mm-hmm. it. Stop it. I don't take it. I don't accept it. I don't care what kind of beautiful clothing and dresses you claim to have for me upstairs. Mm-hmm. I don't really believe you were married before. This is your sadness. It's not mine. I'm sorry, but you keep it.
Yeah, and also she sort of delights in shoving it back in his face.
I think because he's been so, I don't know, remorseless in trying to shove it in hers.
He's been so transparent the whole time. Yeah. In the real life story, he ended up self-destructing, which was a godsend for me. I sort of lifted the veil. It was a very, very weird experience. I was living in Oakland, and I was crazy. And I was in several 12-step programs. And I met this disgusting old man, and he said, what's your problem? And I told him what my problem was, and it was essentially everything we've talked about so far, the existential ennui and the self-loathing of having a consciousness that's limited and blah, 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 blah. And he said, well, I know how to solve that problem. And I was so desperate to believe him. He convinced me to cut everyone else out of my life that wasn't him. He was controlling. I willingly allowed myself to be so controlled. He controlled everything I ate. He controlled everybody I talked to, every hour, how I spent my days, how long of a walk I took in the afternoon. He literally said, don't make a move without me. And I thought, thank God for this person who's come to save my life.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a way, the book is filled with people whose lives are almost saved. In the story called Nothing Ever Happens Here, there's a not very bright but attractive young man. Because he comes from a place small enough, he starred as Romeo in Romeo and Juliet, but it doesn't mean he's a good actor.
Yeah.
And he's come to Los Angeles, and he's living in the house of an older woman who writes a gossip column for grocery giveaway rags, and she likes him.
Well, he's renting a room from her. So
yes.
It starts out, it's very innocent. It's always very innocent. Yeah, and then they have a rapport of a certain kind.
And there's a sweetness about it.
Yeah, sure.
And yet these characters are each of them lost in their vanity and their egotism, and they have found one another to share their failed yearnings with.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the sweeter stories in the book.
It is, yeah. Because it doesn't continue for 5 more pages.
Yeah, well, there's this one in the last scene, I can't remember exactly how I wrote it, but something like the landlady allows the boy to use the phone in her bedroom to call his mother, who's been worried sick. And there's a scene where She moves her hand across his lap, and you think, oh, this is where it's going to happen. She's going to touch him. but really she's just reaching for the phone or something else. I mean, it's him that's narrating. He's still innocent.
He's too unconscious.
Yeah, he can't see it.
And not only that, he doesn't want to call his mother.
No.
So one of the really, I think, terrifying aspects of the story is that he doesn't get his mother. He gets her answering machine, and the landlady tells him, line by line, mm-hmm. exactly what to say.
Right.
Mother, I miss you so much. Mother, I hope you're well. You don't need to worry about me. My career is going great.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the lie of Los Angeles mm-hmm. is being perpetrated on the answering machine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that title, Nothing Ever Happens Here,
mm-hmm.
becomes a very ironic
right.
Title for the story. Now, all of these people, it seems to me, are entrapped in different ways. Do you think that's our fate in general, or just these people?
No, I think I've written a book about trapped people. I totally believe in freedom. Totally believe in it. The characters, they're making some sort of attempt, but I think it's just like stage one. You know, if you're locked inside and brainwashed, first you need to acknowledge that the door is locked, you know, and then that you maybe don't have the key and that nobody can hear you. And so I think that's the level at which these characters are transforming. They're not solving any kind of huge existential problem. They're just knocking on the door, you know. And the new novel that nobody's read yet, the one that I've been working on for a couple of years, it goes past that. So I do believe in freedom. I don't think that we're destined to be miserable and hate our lives. But I do think that some of us probably will.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Otessa Mosveig about her book, Homesick for Another World. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Otessa Mosveig about her latest book, Homesick for Another World, a collection of short stories that challenges readers to face the tender humanity of dark misfits. Misfits.
Yeah. Are you a misfit?
Definitely.
Me too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how to avoid it. Something happened when Flannery O'Connor wrote that story, A Good Man is Hard to Find, mm-hmm. with a character called the Misfit. There was definitely a difference between the misfits and the mm-hmm. victims, the mm-hmm. ordinary people. But now almost everyone interesting joins the misfit camp. How long have you been a writer?
I realized I was a writer when I was 13.
But you've been writing before that, even.
Yeah, I had been writing a little bit. Yeah, but it hit me like it really felt like the way that Jesus comes to you. You know, this is what you will be doing. This is your life. Get used to it and get good at it.
Did you have to escape from the classical music that your parents played?
Well, I didn't know that it was an escape, but you know what? I was so lucky. Well, first of all, my parents are not overbearing. My parents are also misfits, and they totally get it, and they love me, and they would never shame me for not wanting to be a pianist. I mean, that's ridiculous. But I had an amazing piano teacher when I was a teenager, someone who absolutely understood the subtlety of creativity, the soul, and the sensitivity of a finger touching. I mean, the piano is a mechanical instrument. It's a percussive instrument. Yet this teacher showed me that there were different ways to put pressure on a piano key to convey different feelings. I mean, it's like, you know, I cried at every lesson. At every lesson, not because I was failing to play well, but because I was so moved, part of me, beyond thought, that I was so moved to be attempting to get into the mind of this composer and bring to life in that present moment something inspired, you know, with my fingertip. I mean, so I saw her a couple months ago. Actually, it was for, I went back to Boston because Eileen had won the Penn Hemingway Award. And my piano teacher, she's still teaching in Boston. She teaches at the New England Conservatory. Her name is Valentina Lass. She's a tiny, tiny, wonderful little angel. And she showed up at the prize ceremony, and I burst into tears. Couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It was like seeing an ancient relative, you know, like somebody who had given me life, and out of, you know, not even generosity, just that is the service that she was there to do. And she taught me that I could be an artist, that I could be that sensitive, and that I could survive it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of a similar story. I had the same teacher in fourth and sixth grade. She didn't like boring us. Mm-hmm. And so she told us, in order to apologize for the indignity of teaching us long division, she invited her boyfriend to come into the class to teach us binary math.
Whoa.
Ones and zeros. She didn't like the silly school plays that people put on. We did Commedia dell'arte.
Wow.
And we studied the costumes of the different Commedia people. And, you know, I was the old man who ends up wearing a dress in order to convince a young woman that I'm the appropriate mate. And there's a climactic moment where I pull off my wig and say, "And madame, I am the man."
Oh, my goodness.
Now, in this book by my guest, Otessa Mosfeng, Homesick for Another World, it really is as if we're talking about something like The Village of the Damned. The characters are lost, lonely, blinded by vanity. They all have some kind of disease or eating disorder. This really is the sadness of the world that isn't rescued by passion or art.
Yeah.
And that these people are being given a writer who isn't going to give them any of the breaks that you get in a happy story.
Mm-hmm.
This is a writer who says, look at what you've done to yourselves. Look at what you're doing. Look at what we're doing. Look at what life has become. What are we going to do about this?
I don't know if I'm asking, what are we going to do about this? I think I'm just saying, accept it. Because if you could have done it another way, you would have. I mean, I basically don't even believe in will. You know, I think we're just playing out some weird story that's already been prescribed.
Destiny.
Destiny. Destiny. If I could have not been the person who had been miserable enough, self-loathing and self-destructive enough to write Homesick for Another World, I would have done it differently. I would be writing happy stories full of puppies and blooming flowers to make people joyful and carefree. Honestly, this is who I am. I am, this is who I was. I couldn't write this. When I finished Homesick for Another World, I wrote that last story, A Better Place. It came out almost verbatim as it's told. And I said, I never have to write another short story again. I'm done. I'm done. And it really was the end of an era of my life. I'm not interested in this kind of irritating pathology anymore. I want something else. I want to evolve more, you know? Like, I get that I'm trapped. Like, I get, and the trap is just the length of time I have alive on this earth. So what am I going to do? Well, I should have a good time, right? I shouldn't spend it torturing myself to find an answer. I should go to the Masai Mara and look at the animals, you know? I should fall in love. I should, you know, stop weighing myself and everything else for its value and just be weird, you know? So,
will you continue to write all through it?
Well, I wrote another book almost immediately afterwards, and I have to say, it completely messed me up. The book that I've just written is really hard. I'm so glad it's over. Now I just want to write comedy, and I want to write an animated movie about rats and emojis. I mean, I really want to get extremely weird.
I look forward to it.
Thank you. Me too.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You've been listening to Bookworm. I've been talking with Otessa Mosfeg, author of Homesick for Another World, published by Penguin Press. Thank you, Otessa, for joining me.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Homesick for Another World at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is acting as co-producer today. He's our associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.